translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sri Suta Goswami said, Arjuna went to Dwarka to see Lord Sri Krishna and other friends, and also to learn from the Lord of his next activities. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord descended to the earth for the protection of the faithful and annihilation of the impious. So after the battle of Kurukshetra and establishment of Maharaj Yudhishthir, the mission of the Lord was complete. The Pandavas, especially Sri Arjuna, were eternal companions of the Lord, and therefore Arjuna went to Dwarka to hear from the Lord of his next program of work. It's quite a poignant purport. It's a short purport, but there's lots of weight in this purport. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjaya Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaikyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so in reading this title of this chapter, The Disappearance of Lord Krishna, so many thoughts sort of came into my mind. But before that, especially after reading the purport in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, you know, Krishna came to this world. Bhagavad Gita 4.8 is a very famous verse. I'm sure everybody knows. Parityanam sadhanam vinashachayaka duskritam dharma samstapanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. It's a very famous verse. I'm sure everybody knows. But in the purport of that verse, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is quite clearly stated, especially towards the end. It says that, so Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kamsa. But both were performed simultaneously. So it's important for us to understand. I mean, we think, oh yeah, the Lord is coming. You know, all the demigods go to the milk ocean and plead to Mahavishnu, who is lying there, and says, oh, you know, there's so much atrocities going on. The earth is, you know, Mother Bhumi is distressed. Please come to annihilate the miscreants. But the Lord always has his transcendental plans. And there are many, many incarnations. So let me ask you a quick question. I know questions right at the beginning. Huh? Let me ask you a quick question. In this book, very, very good book, by the way. Fantastic. We'll be consulting that a little bit later. We know there are many, many incarnations, right? There are different types of incarnations that we get from the Lord. What type? Can we shout out maybe a few incarnations like Purusha Avatar? What types of avatars? Guna Avatar, yes. Leela Avatar. Yuga Avatar, yes. Brilliant. And Shakti Avesh Avatar. Thank you. They all appear, it says in this purport, they all appear in a scheduled time all over the universe. Now, Lord Krishna's appearance, however, is very, very special, in that he's the primary Lord, and he's the fountainhead of all of the avatars. He descends specifically for the purpose of mitigating the anxieties of his pure devotees, because they are so anxious to see him. They want to have association, personal association with him. And so he not only, obviously all the demigods, they're all, you know, they're doing their duties, they're doing their services, they're endowed with all of their affairs of the universal creation, and then they have to do their service. They have to go to work, say bye to the wife and go off in the car, drive along and go to work, right? They have to do their duty all over and over and over again. But to have this opportunity to associate with the Lord is very rare. And so when the Lord appears, he actually sends his whole entourage, he empowers all of the demigods to go and take birth in many areas of the world. And it is indicated that he, in this specific age, the prime purpose of the Krishna avatar was to satisfy his unalloyed devotees, even in this age of Kali. So in this age of Kali, we know that there's been very, very special avatars, and one obviously to come. But before we talk about that, I'd like to ask you a question. Do we know in the Srimad Bhagavatam how many unique avatars or incarnations are there mentioned of the Lord? Shout out some numbers and then maybe. So how many unique avatars or incarnations have been mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Any ideas? I didn't know until recently, so. Yes? Yeah, so I mean, it's like a huge number. I'm after like a number. Anyone aware? It's like a unique number of, total number of avatars. 50? Yeah? Higher? 108? Very good. Higher? 300? Getting closer. Very close. Yes. Unlimited. Unlimited. Actually, it's 369. It's mentioned. 369. I didn't know until Sutta Prabhu told me about this. And that there are 369 avatars. So many incarnations. They're all specifically mentioned in all of those verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's quite an interesting fact. But I won't list them all here now, but you can come to me later and we can go through at least some of them. So it is also said, as Antaranga Prabhu said, there is a special verse in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5, Canto 11.5.36. We'll look at Canto 11 in a little bit more detail later on. The verse goes, Kalim sabajayanti arya gunagna sara bhagina yatra sankirtanai naiva sarvasvato bilabhyate. So this verse talks about a very, very special appearance of the Lord here in Kali Yuga. Antaranga alluded to it just now, Antaranga Prabhu. He says, those who are actually advanced in knowledge are able to appreciate the essential value of this age of Kali. Such enlightened persons worship Kali Yuga because in this fallen age, all perfection of life can easily be achieved by the performance of Sankirtan. Indeed, so aren't we so, so fortunate? Hare Krishna Maharaj. And aren't we so, so fortunate that in this age of Kali, we have been given this process to connect with the Lord, to connect with his appearance, to connect with his devotees, to connect with his special relationship that he's trying to build with us. That's why he appears. As he said earlier, he appears for his unalloyed, pure devotees. Yeah. The establishment of religion, the miscreants, the killing of the miscreants, all of those things are there, but they are secondary. Okay, so the next part I wanted to mention is also in this purport in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally for such purposes, but he actually descends to exhibit his transcendental activities. So that's the second part. Again, we will come to that also, why he appears. To exhibit his transcendental activities in order to encourage his pure devotees who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord and take pleasure in the activities of the Lord. Okay, we'll move on. So we said earlier on that there are 369 different incarnations mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, unique incarnations. Out of those, we know the 10 Dasa avatars. You know, anyone know about the Dasa avatars? 10? Maybe shout out a few. Vatsya avatar, Varaha, Kurma, Narsinga, Parashuram, Ramanadev. I mean, Parashuram is not one of the tens, but okay. Ramanadev, yeah. Buddha. Kalki. Balaram. Lord Ram, yes. And Krishna and Balaram, that's 10. Thank you. Now, we talked about the Lord appears for his unalloyed devotees, he appears for killing of the miscreants, he appears for transcendental pastimes, he appears for... Yes, indeed. So there are six multi-dimensional pastimes, the reasons why he appears. And these are actually summarized in this book very nicely. It talks about there are six different abbreviations, again mentioned, and actually words. The revelation is the one to establish the divinity of the Lord. Education to teach lessons, attraction to display the beauty and his beauty, and also the beauty of the entire creation, because in his Virat Rupa, he shows the entire universal creation. Rectification to destroy the evil, reciprocation for loving exchanges and enhance that loving exchanges in Vrindavan pastimes. I mean, how nectarian are those? And recreation, to have a good time. Actually, when the Lord ascends, he's really looking forward to coming to this world, to this universe of creation, because he wants to not only build that relationship with his devotees, but also have a good time. Lord Sri Ram, when he was banished to the forest with Sita and Lakshman, in fact, he wanted that. He wanted that alone time with his wife, with his eternal consort, and obviously with Lord Lakshmana, Balaram, because he was looking forward to that. He wants to have a good time. And also, it's a sport, right? It's a sport to have a battle with a similar type of personality. Jay and Vijay, who are his doorkeepers, you know, they want to have a good time with the Lord. So that's why he appears. So that's about the appearance. But this verse actually is talking about disappearance of the Lord. Now, we know that he appears in a transcendental form. He appears in his spiritual body. He doesn't have a material body. But this verse is very confusing. It can actually lead to quite a lot of confusion and doubt, because the disappearance of the Lord is almost like an oxymoron. It seems like, well, it's a contradiction in terms. But... So I got a little bit stuck. So I looked at a little bit more. In this chapter, later on in verse 33, it talks about the setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. Right? When the sun sets, you know, in the horizon, it doesn't mean the sun is not there anymore. It's just from our eyesight, the sun is gone. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or universe does not mean that... It only means that he's out of our sight. But he's performing his pastimes elsewhere in other universes. And so we'll find out by reading a little bit about this disappearance in chapter 11 of this of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapter 1. Then we're going to talk about the summary of that. It's part of something called the Mosala Leela. It's another Leela of the Lord, basically. That's why he's enacted this disappearance. So this chapter 11 talks about the disappearance of the Lord, but also talks about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. Now, after the battlefield of Kurukshetra, we know that all of the miscreants were annihilated, Maharaj Yudhishthir was installed, and we learned from the last chapter how Mahatma Vidura even took Dhritarashtra and Gandhari into the forest and gave them liberation, in the sense that he invoke them to liberate themselves. So the only other sort of powerhouse in the planet at that time were the Yoru dynasty. So let's reread a little bit about the summary of chapter 1 of Canto 11. It says, Lord Sri Krishna expertly arranged the great Kurukshetra battle between the Kurus and the Pandavas, and thus removed to a great extent the earth's burden. But the Supreme Lord, whose influence is inconceivable, was not yet satisfied because of the continued presence of the undefeatable Yadu family. The Lord desired to bring about the destruction of the Yadu dynasty so that he could completely wind up his pastimes on earth and go back to his own abode. Using the pretense of a curse by an assembly of brahmanas, he withdrew his entire dynasty from the surface of the earth. Now, can we imagine how big this dynasty was? Any ideas how big this Yadu dynasty was? Millions, yes? Huh? Very, very close. 560 million individuals, devotees in the Yadu dynasty. To wipe them all out, that's like six times the size of London. Huge, huge city, right? Dwarka. To wipe them all out, and in fact to enact something so ingenious that they wipe themselves out, right? So by Lord Krishna's desire, many great sages headed up by Narada Muni and Vishwamitra assembled at the holy place named Pindarika, near the city of Dwarka. The young boys of the Yadu family, absorbed in a playful mood, also arrived there. These boys dressed Samba in the guise of a pregnant woman about to give birth. Samba is a boy, by the way. And inquired from the sages about the fruitfulness of Samba's so-called pregnancy. The sages cursed the mocking boys by saying, she will give a birth to a club that will destroy your family. So, I mean, you can imagine these boys are just having a laugh, you know, like we do in the Brahmacharya ashram, sometimes in the Bhakta house, right? They're just having a laugh, and then suddenly they've just been cursed, like, oh, by these very serious sages. So they clearly got scared. So the mocking boys had a look on Samba's, you know, garments, and then they were frightened. And immediately they saw there was this iron club that just appeared. So hurrying to the assembly of Ugrasena, back to the kingdom of the Yadus, they offered and report this this event that had taken place. So fearing the brahmanas' curse, Yaduraj Ugrasena ordered the club to be ground into a powder and thrown into the ocean. Within the ocean, the fish swallowed these remnants of this iron, and then the waves took those iron cores and then distributed it along the shore of the bank of this ocean. And then suddenly it actually grew into these canes. So this will be very significant a little bit later. A fisherman caught a fish by a hunter named Jara, who used the iron lump found in the belly of the fish to fashion an arrow. And although the super soul, Lord Krishna, understood what was happening, he did not wish anything else to counteract this events. Rather, in the form of time, he sanctioned all of these events to just happen. So there's further details about this in this canto, Canto 11, in chapters 30 and 31. Chapter 30 talks about the actual disappearance of Yadu dynasty, and chapter 31 talks more about disappearance of Lord Sri Krishna. I'm looking at the time. But due to lack of time, in this book, like I said, there were some really good summaries about these two chapters. So I'm just going to quickly paraphrase this about what happened with the Yadu dynasty, the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty, and then what happened in the disappearance of Krishna. So it says, after Uddhava left, many inauspicious omens were observed in Dwarka. Krishna thus advised the Yadus to depart to Prabhas and perform a series of sacrifices there. Upon arrival, they did indeed perform the ceremonies, but the illusory energy suddenly overcame the entire clan. And they all became intoxicated and started a quarrel. They were drinking this something called the rice wine made out of rice. And then they started quarreling with each other. And then they gave up all the sense of family and kinship. With weapons in hand, they indiscriminately seized the cane that were on the banks of this ocean. They were seized these canes and then started to brutally attack each other on the shore of this ocean. In the mad rampage, they even confronted Balaram. Now, Balaram, Baladev, right? Causing the transcendental brothers to enter into the fratricidal chaos. So Krishna and Balaram were part of this little battle that was going on amongst the 560 million yadus. The entire dynasty was dramatically annihilated in one go. Now this news actually reached the palace. Therefore, Balaram actually went into the ocean. He sat in the meditative state in the ocean, and a great white snake appeared from his mouth, and the serpent Anantasesha carried him out of the world. Following his brother's disappearance, Krishna sat on the ground at which the hunter Jara accidentally shot his left foot. Shishi Radha Gokranda Bhagwana Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Purnitai Ki. So the hunter who fashioned this arrow when we heard earlier on from this belly of the fish, he got the iron, and then he fashioned the arrow. And Krishna had just taken some water from the ocean, and he was sitting, taking rest under a tree. And what happened? Suddenly an arrow hits his foot. His heel, his foot. Says foot on here. And then that arrow, the iron remnants cursed, which was cursed by the brahmanas, the hunter was horrified by this fact because it actually manifested as Krishna's form. And the hunter was completely mortified by this. But the Lord wasn't disturbed. He actually benedicted the hunter and gave him Vaikuntha. He said, no problems, it's okay. So it seems quite inconceivable how Krishna was shot by an arrow and he disappeared. In the book, it says, the denizens of heaven, about disappearance of Krishna, denizens of heaven, along with various illustrious personalities, arrived to offer final respects to the Lord. Then, by Krishna's mystic potency, he entered his eternal abode. So, and then it also says that in Dwarka, Daruka, with tears in his eyes, relayed the heartbreaking news. Feeling the acute emotions of separation, many became unconscious back at in the Dwarka city. Krishna's parents immediately left their bodies on the spot. Arjuna remembered the jewel-like instructions that Krishna has imparted to him. Remember, Arjuna went to see Krishna to see what was his next plan in this universal creation. So Krishna imparted to him to say, please do the last rites. And therefore he also he performed the last rite, and also during this time the ocean devoured the Dwarkapuri city, leaving just the personal residence of the Lord intact. Arjuna transported the Dwarka residence to Indraprash, where Vrajnaba was installed upon the throne of Indraprasht. The remaining Pandavas, headed by Maharaj Yudhishthira, installed Maharaj Parikshit upon the throne and prepared to leave the world. Now, interesting that Krishna disappeared in this way. So there clearly some questions come about how and why certain things have happened. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, in his class about this particular topic, raised these questions, as well as they are in this book also. And then the Acharyas also mentioned some other questions. So why did Krishna end his pastimes in this way? Any ideas? Why would he do it in such a... I mean, he was only 125 years old. Yes, Maharaj. Yes.
It could not. The age of Kali could not do anything as long as Krishna was present.
Yes, very, very good. The age of Kali needed to enter and take form. So whilst Krishna, the sunshine, is still here, the darkness cannot enter. So that's one of the reasons. The Lord actually had already established his due. What the demigods had asked him to do, he'd already completed. He'd already annihilated the miscreants. He already re-established Maharaj Yudhishthira. He already had re-established the principles of religion. Not only that, there were some pastimes, there were some memories, etc. Yes, Nishkinchana Chaitanya Prabhu.
One of the things that is often mentioned in when Krishna manifests his pastimes is, you know, he left by being shot with an arrow.
Mm.
And so some people say, oh, then how can, you know, God be just, you know, shot by an arrow? Krishna must be a normal human being. Obviously, we know from the evidence that actually, you know, arrow obviously can't touch Krishna. And Krishna's pastimes demonstrate that throughout his life. In fact, he even went to Yamaraj himself to get his guru's son.
Correct.
Right? I read that because for atheists, Krishna is very kind. And for atheists, because they want to perpetuate the belief that Krishna is just a normal person, so for them, he will actually give them that satisfaction that, fine, you want to believe that? No problem. I'll even give you the ammunition to believe that as well. But for those who want to know me really, then they'll know the deeper aspects of the fact that it's all my my orchestrations.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. That was, in fact, one of the other questions that were also raised. So thank you for bringing that up, because it says that, yes, Krishna.
And I was going to actually ask you a question on that.
Oh, so. Yeah, sure.
So, you know, with them...
Didn't think we got into questions, but okay, that's fine.
Okay. Actually, you might be answering it. You're going to probably answer in your class anyway. But the pastime of Jara shooting the arrow at Lord Krishna. Jara is someone, right? Because there's one... Yes. I've heard he's Bhrigu Muni, or the other potential that he's Vali
from Ramayana. Ramayana,
so I don't know if maybe later on you'll
talk
about that.
Yeah, I was literally going to mention a little bit about Jara. His previous incarnations of in the Ramayana pastimes was Vali, the brother of Sugriva. And I was going to ask that as a question in the class, but thank you for raising that and jumping the gun. That's fine. So that's what his pastime. So remember, in Lord Ram's pastime, Lord Ram shot Vali from behind a tree because he couldn't. Sugriva and Vali were almost twins; they were like monkey brothers. And Lord Ram tried many things to distinguish between the two brothers, but he couldn't. So he couldn't quite understand who to shoot. So eventually, from behind the tree, he shot Vali. And Vali, during his passing, he said, my dear Lord, you shot me from behind a tree. So why is that? So the Lord says, you know, don't worry. In my next incarnation, you will also shoot me from behind a tree or from in this way. So it just shows that the Lord does not, even take the law of karma. You know, he accepts the law of karma also. What goes around comes around, right? So he even accepts that. So no, what of us? You know, we offend anyone, that eventually will come back to us. Okay, we'll carry on. I'm conscious of time. We also need to talk about the Ekadashi. So, so there was another question raised during whilst we were talking about why didn't Krishna actually remain on this planet itself? Why didn't he, with his devotees, why didn't he actually remain? So Krishna is compared to sunshine and Maya is compared to darkness. Maharaj mentioned about the Kali cannot come along. But the other part is that when Krishna leaves, Dharma also leaves. The spiritual world also leaves. So then what of Kali Yuga? What will happen to what will happen to this material universe? It is said that the Bhagavatam, the Puran itself, is brilliant as the sun and is risen again in this way after the departure of Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. But the Bhagavatam is actually here to serve that purpose of Krishna and to give us everything that we actually need in this age of Kali during this time. So that's why Prabhupada so kindly actually installed and painstakingly translated all of these scriptures into English so that we could understand it. Not only that, he came out of Vrindavan, breaking the rules of transport from, you know, across the ocean, transport of the Vedic scriptures, to go across the oceans and actually reestablish this all over the world. So we can then enjoy and actually get the benefit of this this special mercy. The other question is, why did Krishna depart seemingly in a mundane way, which Nishkinchana Prabhu touched on? And then the other question was, why did Krishna leave a body behind? His body was a spiritual body, right? So why did he leave his body behind? Yes, Maharaj.
So Krishna fulfilled the desires of atheists in this way because he's fulfilling everybody's desires. So yeah. Those who don't want to believe in him as the Supreme Lord, he facilitated that.
Yeah. So this is similar to what Nishkanesh Prabhu mentioned. This is mentioned as Asura Mohana Lila in the Bhagavatam, whereby the pastimes specifically enacted to bemuse the atheists. They can argue that, yeah, Krishna was an ordinary person. They can take that. But Krishna doesn't want to take anybody's free will away. And so he wants to make sure that if they want to believe that, no problems. He will give them all the facilities for letting them believe. If they want to take birth after birth in that belief, sure, he can give them all the facilities that they can do that in the hellish planets, in this planets, and so on. Right? Okay, the Acharyas also mentioned about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. Why did Lord Krishna finish off his clan before his own death? Srila Jiva Goswami has given another reason for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. He emphasized that the activities of the Supreme Lord should never be taken to be ordinary material activities, nor are the Lord associates ordinary persons. Although Lord Krishna apparently incarnates within the world for some time and then goes away, it should be understood that the Supreme Lord is eternally situated by his entourage. We discussed that a little bit earlier. His various abodes in the spiritual sky, such as Sri Gokul, Mathura, Dwarka, are all spiritual. Although the manifestations, you know, Dwarka disappeared, but actually the manifestation of that is still here today, but in its spiritual guise. But we don't have the spiritual vision to actually see it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has pointed out that the ordinary people hearing of the adventures of the Yadu family might think that the heroes of the Yadu dynasty are worshipable as Krishna, or that they are independent controllers. In other words, people polluted by Mayavadi philosophy might see the Yadu dynasty as being on the same level as Krishna, which we know that is not. Therefore, to establish that even, that most powerful living entity can never equal or surpass the Supreme Lord, Krishna arranged the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. The members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal servants of the Lord. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami also explained the word nasha, or destruction, as nigudyama dwarkayam praveshanam iti arthaha. The members of the Yadu dynasty entered into the hidden and confidential dwarka in the spiritual world, which is not manifested here on the earth. And when the earthly dwarka is apparently removed, the eternal dwarka in any spiritual world remains as it is, since the members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal associates of the Lord. There is no question of the destruction. Only our conditioned vision of the manifestation was destroyed. That this is the meaning of the word nasha. So even, you know, it's just through our manifestation that the destruction happened. In its reality, as we said, the sun never dies. The sun is always there. It's just that from our vision, it is set. So that's basically what this verse is talking about. So in summary, we talked about appearance of the Lord's various incarnations, the 369 that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. We briefly mentioned the Dasa avatars, disappearances of Yadu dynasty and Lord Sri Krishna as part of the Mosala Lila, and then the fundamental questions that we just covered about why did Krishna end his pastimes. Maharaj mentioned to please the atheists, why did Krishna remain with his devotees on earth, etc., and all of these questions that we just covered. OK. Okay, are there any other questions in terms of the main class? Yes, Nishkin, the Antaranga Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have one question. You know, when Krishna was playing the role of a messenger, he went to the palace of Kurus, and he was like, okay, please don't fight. But ultimately, we understand from the Gita that Krishna is, as you mentioned, to annihilate the miscreants. So let's say, theoretically, the Kurus will be, yeah, sure, we're not going to fight. Mm-hmm. So will his mission be jeopardized, but by his own will? Because he put his heart into it, like, yeah, you should not fight, you should be, you know, friends, family, and all this. So can Krishna break his own vow of how he descends to give pastime, but also at the same time to annihilate? Because he took the position of, yeah, let's not fight. Does it make sense?
Sure, it makes complete good sense, yes. I mean, there's two parts of the question there. You said, does Krishna break his own vow? And would that jeopardize his plans? Now, Krishna is very clever, as we know from this discussion. Krishna breaks his own vows all of the time, in fact. He breaks rules and regulation all of the time. He brought back the son, his teacher's son from Yamaraj. That's actually breaking one of the fundamental rules. Krishna would have found many other ways of actually bewildering Duryodhana. He knew Duryodhana wouldn't agree. In fact, he even showed Duryodhana the Virat form. But what did Duryodhana say? He said, "You're just a Maya. You're just an illusionist. You're just giving us this illusion." He didn't actually accept Krishna as to who he was. So yes, Krishna breaks his rules all of the time. At the end of the day, this was destined to have happened. If the Kurus would have said, "Sure, we will give you the five towns, villages that you want," but they understood what it was like when they got Indraprastha. Indraprastha was a barren land, and suddenly it became a beautiful oasis, and everybody wanted to live there. Nobody wanted to live with the Kurus. Why? Because Krishna was present there. Krishna was actually present with the Pandavas to guide them and to also develop such a beautiful and engaging environment. So, yes, Krishna is capable of doing anything. At the end of the day, he wants to invoke his pastimes, and therefore he can do that. I don't know if anybody has any other responses to that. I want to add to Antaranga Prabhu's. Yes, Maharaj?
Well, hypothetically, if Duryodhana would actually stop his atrocities, Krishna would spare him. Because we can see in Lord Chaitanya's pastime when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became upset with atheists and he exhibited Chaitanya Nrisingha form, was running around, threatening to kill them. Then Lord Nityananda said, "My Lord, we're meant to kill the demonic mentality rather than demons." And then, he said, in relation to Jagaya Madai, if you want to kill them, then you'll have to kill everybody in Kali Yuga, because everybody is like Jagaya Madai. So Krishna is always ready to switch his mission from, gross to subtle, if need be. So the most important thing is to destroy the demonic mentality. So if demons are persistent, then, he has to destroy their bodies as well. But it's not that Krishna is, very much interested in that.
Thank you, Maharaj. Yes, Ian Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna. Mine was just to add a little bit on what you were talking about in regards to Dwarka and how, people without the spiritual vision can be able to see. It was just interesting because some archaeologists in between 1983 and 1990 found the traces around, the area where Dwarka would have supposedly been of really, really strong foundations that were covered up by the sea. Mm-hmm. And although, yes, they're having limited knowledge in regards to their understanding and research, they found that these of things that they found, or these new pieces of strong foundation of walls and stuff, were traced to around 3000 BC, which would be from our time 5000 years ago. So it's just something interesting that you know. And
very interesting.
Yeah, when we're having those discussions with some devotees, we're saying if then we can solidify this. And be able to establish this as a thing for, you know, the modern-day people who are looking for material.
That was televised in the National Geographic, actually.
Yeah, I think they also did an article on it as well. Yeah, so it was just interesting. Just wanted to add that. Yeah,
thank
so.
You. Thank you for raising that. Nishkinchana Prabhu.
Just following on from what Maharaj said, there's actually a conversation where Prabhupada tells his disciples that World War III should have happened because of the Sankirtan movement. It's been averted for now. So we can see that, you know, Maharaj is saying that Krishna can switch the outcomes. Like if Duryodhana had agreed to, you know, give the kingdom, then Krishna could have still fulfilled his objectives, you know, in another way. And you can see that even in Kali Yuga, Krishna's doing that same thing. Because then, you know, a lot of events may have been destined to happen, but because of the Sankirtan movement, which is the holy name, non-different from Krishna himself. So he's obviously, still switching the outcomes as and when necessary as well, even in our day and age. Mm.
So, yeah. Very nice. Godrama Prabhu?
Thanks for the wonderful class, Prabhu. Just a comment. People say there was an arrow shot into Krishna's foot, so then he died or passed away or whatever. But if I shot an arrow into your foot, or if I got an arrow in my foot, we'd go to Watford General and then we'll be fine, you know?
Well, we might get COVID and we might die.
But also on the Battle of Kurukshetra, there were so many arrows shot into Krishna's body.
Yeah.
And actually it was like it kind of glorified him. They passed through him even, it didn't bother him. You know? Yeah. So that was his pastime, how to exit the world to Kali Yuga to come.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. Any other comment? Yes, Maharaj?
Yeah, just following Godrum Prabhu's comment that this chapter in the 11th canto where it is described how Krishna was shot by Jara in the foot is really funny if you think about it, because Krishna was sitting like that underneath the tree and, you know, one of his feet was placed on his thigh in meditation, and then Jara saw that, you know, he thought this is the face of the deer, and then he shot, and then, you know, nothing happened. And he was thinking, what's that? You know, I shot, I didn't miss, but, you know, there was no movement. So then he went and then he saw four-handed form of Krishna sitting, smiling, with the arrow in his foot, looking at Jara. And of course, Jara was like so apologetic. And Krishna said, oh, it's fine, don't worry. you know, I'll send you to the spiritual world. That was my desire. So don't worry about these things. So it's like, you know, smiling with the arrow in his feet, in his foot, talking to Jara and also sending Jara, you know, like the chariot came, picked the Jara up and he went to the spiritual world.
Yeah.
And then Krishna went to the spiritual world as well.
Yeah. So, thank you, Maharaj.
If anyone believes, and this is the funniest part, if anyone believes that this thing did actually happen, they have to take the authority of Bhagavatam. How did it happen? That it's funny, you know, it's like how Maya is strong, that they believe that this has happened, but they believe that Krishna died. Let them read Bhagavatam.
Yeah. They're remarkable that they want to believe that Krishna died like this, but they actually don't want to believe all the pastimes that Krishna performed during whilst he was here. It's funny, right? Any other questions? Okay, I'm conscious of the time. It's 9:15. We still want to go and discuss a little bit about Nirjala Ekadashi and understand. Now, the thing is, the reason why I've been asked to actually talk about this is because actually hearing the pastimes of this Ekadashi brings about so many benedictions and actually helps people from detachment in material world and from the material energies. So, and I also want to, I did a little bit of research about Ayurveda and this Ekadashi itself as to what happens when we fast from water as well. So let's talk a little bit about that. Okay. So the glories of Pandava Nirjara Ekadashi. It's a bit of a long read, so I'm going to start. Once Bhimsena, the younger brother of Maharaj Yudhishthir, asked the great sage Srila Vyasadeva, the grandfather of the Pandavas, where it was possible to return to the spiritual world without having observed all the rules and regulations of the Ekadashi fasts. Bhimsen then spoke as follows, "O greatly intelligent, learned grandfather, my brother Yudhishthir, my dear mother Kunti, my beloved wife Draupadi, as well as Arjuna and Nakula Sahadev, fast completely on Ekadashi and strictly follow all the rules, guidelines, regulations, injunctions as sacred on this sacred day. By very religious, being very religious, they always tell me that they should that I should also fast. Now, as you know, Bhimsen was a Vrikrodhara. He had a big fire in his belly, and that's what he was known for, a voracious eater, right? And so he couldn't fast. So he was quite distressed that everybody was fasting, but he couldn't fast. So his grandfather, Vyasadeva, actually replied to him and said, please listen to my plea, since I cannot live... Oh no, Bhima said to Vyasadeva, please listen to my plea, since I cannot live without eating even once, even just once a day, let alone fast completely. My stomach burns because of the fire named Vrika, hence his name. The fire of digestion, Agni, the fire god, descends from Lord Vishnu through Brahma, from Brahma to Agni Rasa, from Agni Rasa to Brihaspati, and from Brihaspati to Samyu, who was Agni's father. He is the gatekeeper in charge of Nairiti, the southeastern direction. He is one of the eight material elements, and Parikshit Maharaj is an expert at examining things. He examined Maharaj Shibi once by turning into a dove. Agni is divided into three categories: Devagni, the fire in the wood; Jataragni, the fire in the digestion of the stomach; and Vadavagni, the fire that creates fog when heat and cold steam mixes with each other. For example, the ocean. Another name for fire digestion is Vrika, as we just heard. It is this powerful fire that resides in Bhima's stomach. Bhimasen continued, only when I eat to my full satisfaction does the fire in my stomach become satisfied. O great sage, this is to Vyasadev, I might possibly be able to fast only once, so I beg you that you tell me of an Ekadashi that is worthy of my fasting, and that includes all Ekadashis. I shall faithfully observe that fast and hopefully still become eligible for liberation. So, you know, everyone's seeking liberation, even Bhima. Srila Vyasadeva replied, O king, you have heard from me about the various kinds of occupational duties such as elaborate Vedic ceremonies and pujas. In the Kali Yuga, however, no one will be able to observe all these duties and perform them properly. I shall therefore tell you how, at practically no expense, one can endure some small austerity and achieve the greatest benefit of and resultant happiness. The essence of what is written in the Vedic literatures known as the Puranas is that one should not eat on either the dark or the light fortnight Ekadashis. Srimad Bhagavatam Enikvaliki message says, in that full surrender to Lord Sri Krishna and rendering of loving devotion service to him, observing Ekadashis strictly is a great aid in that process. And here Srila Vyasadeva is simply stressing to Bhima the importance of Ekadashis. It says, one who fasts on Ekadashi is saved from going to the hellish planets. Okay. So hearing this, Bhimsen again pleads to Vyasadeva and says, O grandfather, what shall I do? I'm completely unable and ill-equipped to fast twice in a month throughout the year. Please tell me of the fasting day that will bestow the greatest benefit upon me. Vyasadeva replied, without drinking even water, you should fast on the Ekadashi that occurs during the light fortnight of the month of Jaishtata, which is May and June, which is this Ekadashi here, Pandava Ekadashi. When the sun travels in the sign of Taurus, Vrishabha, and Gemini, Mithuna. According to the learned personalities, on the day one may bathe and perform Achamana for Paritprokshana purification. But while performing Achamana, one may drink only that amount of water equal to one drop of gold or that amount it takes to immerse one single mustard seed into the Achamana. Only this amount of water should be placed in the water palm while sipping. So once we are doing all the Achamana for a Mangal transfer, it should only be that drop, you know. If one drinks more water than this, it might as well have drunk wine. One must certainly not eat anything, for he does not do so as that will break his fast. This rigid fast is in effect from sunrise on Ekadashi day to sunrise on Dwadashi day. If a person endeavors to observe this great fast very strictly, he easily achieves the result of observing all 24 other Ekadashi fasts throughout the entire year. Haribol. Okay, so on Dwadashi day, one should bathe early in the morning, then according to the prescribed rules, guidelines, regulatory injunctions, and of course, depending on his ability, he should give some gold and water to worthy brahmanas. Finally, he should cheerfully honor prasadam with the brahmanas. Okay. So then it continues like that. And Bhimsen is very satisfied, and then he is able to fast like this.
Everyone should give some gold to
Gautama. Yes, Haribol. And obviously a cow as well. So, you know, we've got plenty of cows in the Goshala, so that was also very, very good. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what are the sort of benefits, other benefits of actually fasting on this special day. They're Ayurvedically said that when we fast on this day, we actually, the body gets rid of a lot of toxins because there's not even water in the body. It says that these toxins are thrown through the digestive tract, and then when we actually go back and return into Dwadashi to return and resume our eating, we should start with warm water, and that will then flush and actually line the stomach to be able to accept the grains and the foods and everything else that we'll be eating on the Dwadashi day. Also, it is said... let me just bring that up a bit more. That gone? Oh, here it is. It says that some people fast on this day, especially it's a bit of a competition. Look, I have been able to fast Nirjal. So the mood isn't right. So the mood of this, the most important point to remember is our purpose of fasting on this day. And that is the purpose to keep Krishna in the center, which is really the success of this. Ekadashi. The purpose of us actually curtailing all the eating and all the, obviously, the activities that happens afterwards is that we're using this time to satisfy Krishna through our austerities. Some people see that as look, I've been so austere. It's like almost like a show-off. Look what I can do. But, you know, it's actually more important to see that this sacrifice is to please Supreme Lord Krishna. And not to feel proud or become perplexed that other people are being able to do this. Lastly, I'd like to mention that before we start this fast, we should pray to the Lord and seek His blessings. We should recite the purpose in the front of the deity and request the Lord to keep our consciousness pure throughout the day and the day after. That will make our fasting successful. Bhima Ekadashi ki.
Jai.
Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Jai. Sam Prabhu has got a question.
Just on that point you made at the end. Thank you for the class, by the way. Radhanath Maharaj once said that if you're fasting and you're feeling proud, it's better to go and take prasadam and be humble about it than...
Very good. Like it. Like it so much.
Yeah, also those who are fasting without water and feeling that it's hard, what helps is extra showers, you know, longer showers, because body can absorb water through the pores as well. And so it does not constitute breaking fast, but it can make...
So it's not cheating? That's not cheating?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it can make it easier.
Okay. Even staying in a cooled environment, it was said here, or, you know, less exertion, so not sweating so much that at least you don't lose water content. Anything else? We haven't heard anything from the ladies today, which I'm really surprised. Okay, Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki.
Jai.